Hello, and welcome to Check Out This Guy, the podcast where we sometimes buy clothes based on our OCs. Wait, no, stop, rewind that back. Hello, and welcome to Check Out This Guy, the podcast where you thought it was Check Out This Guy. But no, it was me. Check out this, comma, guy.
The podcast where we put a slightly different emphasis on it.
Yes. Hi, I'm Izzy, and I really like some giant robots sometimes. My pronoun today shall be she.
Let's go. I'm Emery. My pronouns are they, she, he. Finally, Izzy has a platform for her hyperfixation.
Uh-huh.
And she finally got one.
Uh-huh.
I had a whole entire Digimon podcast. It's about time. You got something, too.
Yeah. So, let me start off by describing something to you.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me if this sounds familiar. So,
let's hear it.
We've got a giant robot with multiple pilots. It has multiple forms and different iterations of it in a story that takes place over decades. The one most people think of is mostly red. It has a couple of bladed weapons it can throw like boomerangs and use a drill arm attack to tear through pretty much everything. It can fly. It runs on green energy that represents the power of evolution and requires a huge amount of willpower to control. The first bad guys in the show are beastly, and one of their pilots gives their life leading up to the final battle of the first arc. And then you've got the final enemies of the story who are kind of just from beyond space and time, with the goal of eradicating or containing humanity and that green evolution energy. Does this sound familiar?
Well, Izzy, I gotta tell you, it does sound familiar. Sounds exactly like Gurren Lagann, I gotta tell ya.
No!
Are we talking...
We are not talking about... Well, we will stop off on Gurren Lagann eventually. No.
Wow.
No.
Izzy lured me in here by telling me it was a Gurren Lagann podcast. This is news to me.
That's a lie.
Yeah, that's true.
No. Thank you for playing with me on this bit. Cause you know what the topic is. I want to talk about Getter Robo. Cause Getter Robo is really cool. But the thing.
Yeah, the way you described it, it does sound exactly like Gurren Lagann.
Uh huh. We'll get to that. There's a reason why.
It sounds like Gurren Lagann is referencing it to a degree that most people are probably unaware of.
Yes, included. Yes, which is why I wanted to talk about it. So you've got like your three like holy trinity of giant robots, which is Mazinger Z, Gundam, and the third one is Getter Robo. But over here in America, for various reasons, not many people have even heard of it. So I did want to have like a little bonus episode just to be like, hey, Getter is really freaking cool. People should check it out. I recommend the manga. That's like the main story, but there's also some OVAs that kind of remix it a bit. They're all their own unique story. They're not really so much adaptions as just like celebrations of Getter. So very much encourage everyone, hey, go check out at least some version of Getter Robo. Heck, even if it's the weird Monster of the Week 70s show. But here's the thing. Getter is really cool, but I don't want to spoil the plot very much. I just want to go over the basics. It really is an experience. So my plan was to just fill some time with connections to other works and a little bit of cultural history, and then I went down a rabbit hole. Turns out my notes are 6 pages long.
Yeah, you went off on this.
In my defense, the sixth page is only 2 lines.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's not much of a defense. It's still more than 5.
Yeah, no, sounds like an average hyperfixation, honestly. Sounds like you would be starting your own entire spinoff podcast if anyone else here had watched Getter Robo.
Oh, the thing is, there's a finite amount of Getter.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is mostly gonna be me talking about like anime and manga history. Because that's how we're gonna fill the time and have a full episode length. I hope this doesn't go extra long. So
6 pages of notes, it might go for a little while.
Yeah. I do need to apologize in advance. I do speak the way I do. I am from the American South. Hey, I'm gonna mispronounce some names and words. Please deal with it. We need to start our story basically a little after World War II in Japan. Because we're going to have a lead up together, because I found out something that's kind of fun and wild. So we're going to start with Osamu Tezuka. You know that guy.
Yeah, we're starting way at the beginning, huh?
Well, he's often treated like he created manga and anime, but those all already existed for quite a while, at least decades. But he did popularize them, especially because he had his own style. And just a few of his works include Astro Boy, Kimba the Lion, Princess Knight, and Blackjack. There's also one that I know you're gonna want to mention.
Sexy mouse girl that yes. He drew and then hid in a drawer.
Mm-hmm. Many pictures of the sexy mouse girl.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
When I was looking for pictures of the sexy mouse girl, I did find, like, a whole collection of his erotica on archive.org. There's much weirder stuff than sexy mouse girl in there. Boy, oh boy.
Oh boy.
Man liked some TF, it seems.
Oh, interesting. But this is not werewolves. This is check out this guy.
True.
Okay, so we're starting with him. Very famous dude. One of his assistants was a fella named Shotaro Ishinomori. Even worked with him on Astro Boy and some other work. And he has a lot of credits to his name. One of his first things was a Cyborg 009. I think a lot of weebs have at least heard of that one.
Uh-huh. I've heard of it. I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, that's fine. And then in 1970, Toei hired him to create a live-action superhero. When they did that, he wrote his own version of what it would be as a 100-page long one-shot manga. named Skullman. So a year later, the TV show came out, and he wrote and drew the manga version of that show, which was a bit more dark and mature than you know this live action kid show. And I am, of course, talking about Kamen Rider.
There it is.
Yeah. So that's why Shotaro from Double is named Shotaro. He's named after the creator of the original Kamen Rider.
Huh. I also wonder if the fact that Shotaro's predecessor was like a skull guy.
Oh yeah. Kamen Rider Skull is just straight up based on Skull Man.
Hell yeah.
And so with Kamen Rider, we have this whole genre of henshin heroes. And, you know, he would come back to Kamen Rider again over the years, you know, with different sequels series. He also created an android hero named Kikaider. So let's go on a quick tangent with Kikaider real quick. There was a spinoff movie of Kikaider called Mechanical Violator Hakaider.
Boy, oh boy, that's a fucking name.
That is a fucking name. So, in Kikaider, Hakaider was the name of one of the villains. He was Kikaider's android brother, and he kind of had a gimmick where he liked to announce his presence by whistling. I'm pretty sure that Proto Man is just a giant reference to Hakaider.
Interesting.
You know, from Mega Man.
Okay. Yeah, I don't go to Mega Man, but I recognize the name. I can picture them in my mind.
Mm-hmm. So that movie was written by a prolific anime and tokusatsu writer, Toshiki Inoue. I just want to mention them because they're very prolific. But I want to talk about the director, one of my favorites. It was Keita Amemiya, you know, the guy that made Zerum, Iria, and Garo.
Yeah.
And just a little fun fact I learned recently. Part of the reason why Garo only comes out like every few years, it's because he apparently personally funds the productions.
That's so fucking wild.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I guess like, God, imagine just, like, having the independent wealth to be like, yeah, I don't have to go to a studio. I'm just gonna make my own damn TV show and fund it myself, and mm-hmm. It's gonna have a giant naked lady in it who flies around like a spaceship, and no one can tell me no.
Yeah. We're gonna mention Garo again later.
Oh boy, bookmarking that for later. I hope that there's at least someone in the listening audience here who knows what Garo is, because I had not heard of it before Toku Mondays.
Yeah, the people who attended Toku Mondays.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hey, if you don't know what Garo is, just join our Discord.
Yeah, yeah, join our Discord to hear all about Garo, the tokusatsu series where apparently, like, a Wizard of Oz happens.
Uh-huh.
Garo Man.
Yeah. Hey, there's a Sheev Palpatine. Yeah. Sheev Palpatine that shows up in that show. It's great.
Yeah, Sheev is there.
There's knockoff Adam Driver. It's real fun.
That's right.
So that was a tangent. We're gonna go back to the main line of thought. So Shotaro Ishinomori was an assistant to Osamu Tezuka. He had his own assistants, One of them was a fella named Gonagai.
That's the name we all know.
That is a name we should all know.
That's the name we all learned when we watched Devilman Crybaby on Netflix.
Uh-huh. Oh. You probably know more about Devilman than I do. I do know that it is like one of those seminal works, but I've never laid eyes on more than a few seconds of it.
Yeah. I watched the one on Netflix. It was kind of a fucking bummer.
Uh-huh. So Gonagai, ripped to the Gonagai Museum, which as of recording, apparently burned down 2 days ago.
Man, art preservation is already so much of a fucking mm-hmm. battle. Like, it's really such a fucking tragedy that a whole museum mm-hmm. dedicated to the man is apparently just gone now.
Yeah. Like, it had a bunch of original work in there, too.
Yeah, oh my god.
And, you know, he was kind of important because he gets created, you know, or he gets credited as the creator of, like, half the genres.
Yeah, holy shit.
Okay, so, let's... We're in 1968 now. And there's
we're so close to the funny number.
Uh-huh. I don't think we're going to talk about anything that particularly happens in 1969. I'm sorry.
Oh man.
I wasn't even thinking about the funny sex number.
God, when I bought Digimon, I bought some Digimon TCG singles to get today, and I bought 65 cents worth of cards, and I was like, wait a minute, is sales tax going to make that the funny number? But then apparently they just didn't charge me sales tax, so I did count out 69 cents, however, because I knew I was going to be spending less than a dollar.
Uh-huh.
I'll bring exact change.
Nice. So, there was this company, Shueisha, and they were about to launch a little magazine named Shonen Jump.
Hey, I know that.
Yeah. And
that's the company that lets me pay $2.99 a month to see Luffy.
Shonen Jump, real big. Funny thing about that. One of the first people that they hired to create something for Shonen Jump was Gonagai. And keep in mind, before I say this next part, that this is Shonen Jump.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because what I'm going to say, without you keeping that in mind, is going to sound a lot worse. The manga he made for Shonen Jump was something called Harenchi Gakuen, which was the first modern erotic or ecchi manga.
Bastard man.
Yeah, like, all that thanks anime stuff that we come across.
When we see just the most jiggling titty right there across the screen, and we say, ugh, thanks anime.
Yeah, yeah, ultimately, we get to thank Uncle Go.
Thank you, Uncle Go, for these titties being pressed against my face.
Uh-huh. So what that...
I hate it, actually.
Yeah, so what that was it was really a gag manga about kids in high school. But he was like, hey, teenagers be horny.
Uh-huh.
He was very mindful that this was something that was gonna be sold to children.
Uh-huh.
And they would read it, so, like, he never depicted sex. He never depicted any... Like, he tried to make things look funny and not sexy when he drew nudity. But, you know...
That's pretty much the way I draw horny content. So, you know what? Solidarity.
Yeah, so like, he was the one that invented, like, the guys hanging outside the women's bathhouse trying to get a peek. Because that was the type of stuff that was in there.
Bastard man, I'm back to being mad at him.
Uh-huh, I know. But you wouldn't be the only one who was mad at him. Because PTAs protested and managed to ban Shonen Jump in some areas.
Wow. Yeah, unsurprising.
So, what do you think Gonagai did?
Did he just go invent a bunch of new non-ecchi genres?
He did eventually, but... He took Horenshi Gakuen and went serious mode and had it have a finale. And in it, it goes real serious, and all the teachers and students are killed by the PTA while defending freedom of expression.
Fuck it, you know what? Good on him.
Uh-huh. Oh, like, There were continuations later on. It wasn't the real ending of it, but yeah, he went hard. And like that was one of the most popular mangas. Like, I think within a few years there had been like 4 movies and a TV show.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Again, super popular. And with all that controversy, Gonagai was like a well-known figure now. Problem with that, though, is he didn't own the work. Shueisha did, and he basically got almost no royalties, even though it was so popular and so successful.
We hate the fucking manga industry.
Uh-huh. Good news.
What?
In 1969.
Hell yeah!
He created a company named Dynamic Productions.
Okay.
We'll come back to that in a bit. So, Go loved Astro Boy and Tetsujin 28. You might know that one as Gigantor. And he wanted to make his own robot show, but he wanted it to be unique.
Mm-hmm.
But he couldn't think of anything, and then one day he got stuck in a traffic jam and was like, hey, I bet the people stuck in the back would really love to have a way of bypassing everyone else. So he kind of imagined a giant robot that you could pilot, and you got into it by driving up its back in a motorcycle and docking in the head. He kind of changed that idea, though, a little bit before he made the actual show, because Kamen Rider was super popular at the time.
Uh-huh.
And other than Karate Bugman, what's the other big thing in Kamen Rider? Motorcycles. Motorcycle. Yeah. So he changed it to a flying craft called the Powder, and that's how we got the very first piloted super robot.
Let's go.
So that is the machine that could make you a god or a devil, Mazinger Zed. We are noise based podcast, so I will say Zed.
Yeah.
So the original run of Mazinger Zed, both the anime and the manga, was from 1972 to 1974.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he created another super long-running, super successful property, Devilman.
Man's is busy.
Mm-hmm.
It is already enough of a fucking punishing nightmare on your body to do one successful manga series. Doing two at once, that's some next level shit.
Oh, wait till we get to one of the next notes, but like Ishinomori had Skullman and Kamen Rider, like the prototype and then the normal version. Devilman was kind of the same deal. He created a Demon Lord Dante first, and then Devilman was kind of like the refined version of the same concept. And like both Kamen Rider and Devilman were made for Toei even. And Devilman is one of those things like everyone, like every other writer and artist says it was an inspiration to them. So this was 1972, and you thought he was writing and drawing two manga? No. So
that's what I assumed.
No, you're wrong.
Was it just one? Was he doing a human amount of workload?
No, of course not. He was writing and drawing five different weekly mangas all at the same time.
That's not fucking possible, you see. I mean, I guess like art sort of standards were different back in the 70s, but still, like, that is an unfathomable amount of drawing you have to do. Like, I don't understand how there are...
How you create half the genres.
Yeah, I don't understand how there are physically enough hours in the week to do even one manga series. You say he does five, that just sounds fake to me. I don't think that's real.
Okay, so I don't remember the name, but there's at least one other artist that has managed the same feat. No one has ever had six.
God.
So he holds the record there. In 1973, he ended Devilman and immediately launched a sequel, which was named Violence Jack. And this was the first post-apocalyptic anime and manga.
Wow.
Another genre. So, think like a Mad Max or Fist of the North Star, but this came years earlier.
Wow.
Yeah. Same year, he created Cutie Honey, which wasn't the first magical girl story, but it did establish tons and tons of the tropes. Like that's the one that Sailor Moon was like Sailor Moon credit as this was the inspiration. So with Cutie Honey, let's take another live action tangent real quick.
Oh boy.
I think I know a
big name we're about to hear.
So we're gonna skip ahead to 2004. There was a live action adaptation of Cutie Honey by this guy who was known more for animation at the time. Actually, he even directed a Cutie Honey OVA that same year. So you know who it is. Say the name.
Hideaki Anno.
Yep, the Evangelion dude. Also the dude who later made Shin Godzilla, Shin Kamen Rider, and Shin Ultraman. Yep. But he's just a stepping stone for me. Because I want to talk about his first job as an animator.
Okay, yeah.
This is just so I can talk about another anime that I like. Super Dimensional Fortress Macross. Because that is one of my all-time favorite things. Yeah, it was the idea of mecha designer Shoji Kawamori. And it's about three things. One, jets that transform into mechs.
Good.
Two, musical idols. And three, love triangles.
Let's go.
Almost every part of the Macross meta series is good. Although it frequently runs into pacing issues because they kept having shows with just like weird production problems. Either the number of episodes they actually got didn't line up with the intended episode counts, or so sometimes they ran longer, sometimes they ran shorter. The original, they kept on changing the number of episodes they had throughout the production. Mm-hmm. So they actually had like the final battle and the climax of the series. And then they had, I don't know, like 10 more episodes or something. Mm-hmm. Which is actually the key to why Macross became so famous, I think, because you had this huge epilogue that really got into the characters. After the entire planet Earth got glassed, basically.
Wow, just like Homestuck.
Yeah, but before the show ends, partway through, the entire human population is reduced to like 30,000 people.
Damn.
And then they reach peace with the aliens that did this. And they actually address, how do you move on from that?
Uh-huh.
How do these two cultures integrate and all this stuff? And also, you've reduced the population down to 30,000 people that have gone through a very particular set of events. And it completely makes human culture after that very wild. Everyone is big into idols after that, because one of them kind of saved humanity with a song. Also, then there's Macross Delta, which had an amazing pilot episode, but the actual show sucked because they changed staff after that pilot episode. So a few other things Kawamori was involved in are Vision of Escaflowne.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of that.
Genesis of Aquarian, which I only want to mention because it's kind of his idea of Getarobo.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I want to mention is a Takara toy line called Diaclone.
Uh-huh.
You know Diaclone even if you don't know it.
I don't know it, so apparently I do.
Yes. That's one of the toy lines that Hasbro used to make the Transformers.
Oh, okay.
He designed Battle Convoy, which is the toy that they used to turn into Optimus Prime. So if you were one of those kids that was like, hey, Optimus Prime is a father figure to you, Kawamori is basically your grandpa.
Yeah. If you've ever called Optimus Prime daddy in your life, you have this man to thank. I'm sorry, this isn't Prime Cuts.
No, it's not.
I shouldn't be making... Should I?
No, you're dad, you're my dad, boogie woogie woogie woo. Okay, so tangent over.
Great.
Okay, Mazinger Z, it blew up huge. Absolutely gigantic success for the manga and anime. Toei wanted more. And so that they made a sequel series, Great Mazinger. But they wanted more, and they wanted to sell more toys.
Companies do.
Yeah, so they hired Nagai to create a new show.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So back to the creation of Dynamic Productions. One of the first things he did when he created Dynamic Productions, which also his brothers were involved in the creation of it, but one of the first things he did was he hired one of his friends, Ken Ishikawa.
Uh-huh.
And as I understand it, he was not like, he was not a writer. He was not a manga artist. Like he did other stuff before this. So obviously the funniest thing I could do right now is to not talk about Ken Ishikawa or Getter Robo.
Uh-huh.
But to go further down this line of assistance, because he had an assistant later on.
Okay. Uh-huh.
By the name of Kazuki Nakashima.
Uh-huh.
He's best known as being an anime writer. And he describes himself as being like the world's biggest fan of Ken Ishikawa and Getter Robo.
Uh-huh.
And this makes sense.
Uh-huh.
Because all the stuff that people know him for the most part, is obviously very influenced by Getter. Also, like I mentioned that Cutie Honey OVA earlier, he was the writer for that. Okay. He also was the writer for one of my favorite episodes of Kamen Rider Double.
Let's go.
He wrote the Yesterday Yuki arc, which, you know, that's the one with the missing cat and Kirihiko's sister.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Catboy Shotaro.
Catboy Shotaro.
Hey. If you don't know what we're talking about, you have two options. One, join the Discord. Join us for Monday group watches. I can offer you an alternative.
Uh-huh.
I can offer you an alternative specifically for Kamen Rider Double, because we've watched that already. We're not going to watch it again. Hey, Emmy.
Uh-huh.
You have another podcast.
I sure the fuck do.
What's that podcast?
It's called We Write Queerbait, a show where we explore the blurry line between homie and homo.
Yeah, and I don't know when this is gonna come out.
Oh, definitely like a solid fucking month or so before that episode.
Okay, so at the time of this recording, I'm really dating us.
Mm-hmm.
At the time of this recording, in 6 days...
You're really dating one of us. I'll edit that out.
Or leave it in. That's up to you. You do need to tell me, though, which you choose.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Editor's note, I didn't edit it out.
Okay, so... in 6 days, Devin asked me to guest on We Write Queerbait to talk about Double.
Uh-huh. And New Year's was 2 days ago.
Yep, so you can... so, if you want to hear about Kamen Rider Double, go listen to that. Anyway, he was also the head writer for Kamen Rider Forze.
Uh-huh.
And then for Gainax and Trigger, which is what most people are gonna know him for, he was the head writer for Gurren Lagann, Kill la Kill, Brand New Animal, and Promare.
Oh, hell yeah.
I'm gonna be real with you.
Uh-huh.
I didn't like Promare, and I completely memory-holed it.
Uh-huh. I have not actually seen Promare yet. I'm sure we'll get to it eventually on We Write Queerbait.
Yeah. So... I can't comment on it because I literally just, like, I threw it in my mental recycle bin and said permanently delete.
Nice.
But the others, especially the first two,
uh-huh,
are basically just different takes on the themes and ideas found in Getter Robo.
Interesting.
To a certain extent, also BNA. Although I think that one exists probably more because Zootopia was like super fucking huge in Japan.
Uh-huh.
and all sorts of different manga and anime wanted to capitalize on funny little furry people.
Yeah, we did get BNA and like the first season of Beastars, real close together.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I could,
I know which one I prefer.
Which one?
BNA.
Yeah. The characters are a lot cuter.
I like the funny little Tanuki girl. She's a freak.
She sure is. So
like her fox girl girlfriend.
Okay. I was about to say I could go on some more bullshit and tangents, but that's enough.
Uh-huh.
No, we're gonna go on a little tangent here.
Let's go. Let's forget what we were initially even talking about.
Oh no. I want to talk about Beastars for a second.
Okay.
Okay, Beastars. I'm one of the people that like, oh, hey, the anime came out, and hey, that first season of the anime was real interesting, and when it ended, I read the entire manga.
Uh-huh.
And here are a few things about Beastars. First of all, that's something that I think was a victim of a huge amount of editorial interference.
Yeah.
Where I don't remember her name. But the author and artist, she obviously just wanted to write this drama, but it was in a shonen manga magazine.
Uh-huh.
And it went from that to being a battle manga.
Uh-huh.
And it really didn't work. But
But judging based on what episodes I've seen of Beastars, it doesn't seem like it should be a battle manga.
Oh, absolutely not. It is a very fucking weird the story. It's so fucking weird. And it just gets more and more off the rails. Here's the thing though. What I really want to say about Beastars is it is a very particular type of anthro-animal where they basically take a human body and slap an animal head on it.
Yeah.
And it's super fucking off-putting to me. I do not like that.
Yeah. I like it when you mix up the proportions a little more. You know?
Yeah.
Put some digitigrade legs on there. Make the hands big and shonky.
Yeah. Just Beastars looks so weird. I got used to it because that first arc is mostly a good story. It's a little bit too weird. But it was like I wanted to know what else was going to happen, and unfortunately I found out.
Yeah.
Okay, so anything you want to say about those? Or shall we go back to the 70s?
Not really. My Beastars opinions are a whole can of worms, so let's divert from that course.
Yeah, teenagers be horny, but Beastars is way too fucking horny.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to the 70s. We're gonna get to the point now. We're gonna get to the point.
Here we are at the point.
We're gonna finally talk about Getter Robo.
I can't wait. Let's go. We've been recording for 45 minutes.
Uh-huh. Good. This is timed out exactly how I want it to be.
How many pages of your notes have we actually gone through so far?
We're about halfway.
Okay.
I think it's going to go quicker now, though.
Okay.
Okay. So Toei wanted a follow-up to Mazinger Z and wanted it to be more toyetic. I mean, these shows were basically paid for by the toy companies. I think Mazinger Z and, I'm sorry, Zed and Getter Robo were both, is it Poppy or Pope? Something like that. I think it's Poppy. They wanted something more toyetic, more toys. It's my understanding, and believe me, I looked for a source for this, and I know that I saw it somewhere years ago, but I couldn't find anything. That's one of the problems with this being kind of niche and only being an English speaker is my sources are limited. Mm-hmm. But my understanding is the name Getter Robo comes from the fact that at the time, soccer and rugby were like ultra, ultra popular with the kids. And so it took its name from the term goal getter.
Interesting.
And like one of the first images in the original manga is a rugby game. So I think that lines up. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen any other explanation for it. And I swear I saw that explanation years ago. But again, couldn't find it. Couldn't get a source. So much of this is me going off of memory, but also I went down a Wikipedia rabbit hole on who was whose assistant. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Go Nagai must have gotten all of his mecha ideas from Traffic or something, because him and Ishikawa were trying to figure out how to make this new show work, and they saw a car crash.
That's fucking harrowing.
Yeah, and that's how they got the idea of the first transforming combiner super robot, and again revolutionized the mecha genre forevermore, because they basically just decided to say, hey, let's make Getter Robo work like that. Just take the vehicles and smash them into each other, and boom, out pops a robot.
Hooray.
Yeah, so there's these three vehicles. They're basically jets. They're the Getter machines. Depending on which of the jets was leading the combination, you got three different forms. So Go Nagai and Kenishikawa worked on the original Getter Robo together. Most of the plot and characters were Ishikawa's, and like Nagai will be like, nah, that's an Ishikawa joint. And he continued the story repeatedly over the years. So gonna kinda give you the setup for Getter Robo.
Uh-huh.
Millions of years ago. Okay. This I don't remember when all the order that this gets revealed in. But I'm gonna try to go chronological up into a certain point. And hey, the show went back further than I did.
Yeah.
So millions of years ago, the Earth was bathed in the glow of Getter rays, which caused two major things. First, this radiation was super deadly to dinosaurs. And second, it sparked the evolution and rise of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what?
What?
Some of those dinosaurs, they're like, hey, we're gonna fucking burrow underground. And they eventually become people and turn into the dinosaur empire led by Emperor Gore.
Interesting. So we got the humans up top, the funny little beasts down below. It is kind of an
inverse.
Yeah, uh-huh. Inverse a Gurren Lagann situation. I forgot the fucking name for a second.
Yeah, so the dinosaur empire wants two things. The extermination of mankind and dominion over the entire Earth.
Yeah, reasonable demands.
Mm-hmm. So meanwhile, there's this genius scientist by the name of Dr. Sautome, who's studying Getta Ray energy, and he creates this mecha called Getta Robo, which runs on them. Hey, it runs on Getter. It's called Getter. Hey, yeah, but the problem with Getter Robo is you gotta have some seriously special lads to pilot it.
Oh yeah, the classic special boy dilemma where your robot can only be piloted by a guy with the special stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's a little bit different in Getter.
Interesting. Go on. So, I take it that it means that it's maybe a little different than just having a main character disease.
Yeah, it's a little bit more than main character disease. So, like, the normal thing, you gotta be in peak physical condition. And you gotta, because the forces involved will just splatter most people across the cockpit.
Oh.
Or they'll lose consciousness from G-forces, what have you. It's a bad situation to try to pilot one of these.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta have a really strong will.
Uh-huh. Well, that comes standard with your shonen protagonist.
Yeah, that's normal so far. Kinda in the middle between normal and getting out there a little bit. So I'll ask my normal question that I sometimes ask you.
Uh-huh.
Is it gay to unite your hearts as one and work together to sink in Getai?
Ooh, I'll have to consult with my fellow judges on We Rate Queerbait, but you know, uh-huh. I'm gonna give a tentative yes as just a uh-huh. Preliminary finding.
Yeah. So basically, hey, keep in mind early 70s. Yeah, Getter pilots basically needed to be drift compatible.
Uh-huh.
But hey, there wasn't two of them. There were three.
Oh. Fascinating.
Uh-huh. But the thing that takes this beyond being just main character disease.
Uh-huh.
You gotta be fucking insane.
Cool.
So let me tell you about the first set of special boys.
Let's go, let's hear it. I want to hear about them boys.
Yeah, and this kind of sets up the template for what a Getter team is.
Mm-hmm.
I said it takes place over decades. There's more than one.
Hell yeah.
So, our main guy, Ryoma Nagare, he is a hot-blooded karate master out for revenge for the death of his father.
Uh-huh. Sounds like anime to me. Go on.
Uh-huh. Next up, Hayato Jin is the cynical and calculating psychopath teenage terrorist.
Let's go. I like this guy. I like him.
No, like, absolute, like, not funny little freedom fighter, like, literal just evil psychopath teenage terrorist.
Yeah, definitely put that guy in the big robot. What could go wrong?
Uh-huh. Oh boy. And then our third one is Musashi Tomoe. Who's just this kind of tubby fellow who was initially rejected as a pilot.
Uh-huh.
He's mostly fun and happy-go-lucky, but I'm gonna say he might be the one you want to fuck with the least.
Interesting.
But, like, he's not as smart or as strong as either of the two boys.
Uh-huh.
But he's absolutely desperate to prove himself.
Uh-huh.
And he's got that little extra something that gets everything else to work.
Uh-huh.
So you kind of have these three roles. You got the guts, the brain, and the soul.
Uh-huh.
And so our original getter machines are the eagle, the jaguar, and the bear.
Uh-huh. All A-plus animals.
Yeah. And I'm going in the same order each time, so just to make things easier. So eagle is red and leads getter one, which can fly. It's kind of the default one.
Uh-huh.
Jaguar is white, piloted by Hayato, and it's the land-based one, and also like the super speedy one, and is armed with a drill.
Okay.
And then Bear is yellow and piloted by Musashi, and it's kind of a tank that can also be used underwater. Uh-huh. It also has funny extendo arms.
Uh-huh. See, I'm just having a fucking kind of weird brain moment here. Is this Digimon Cross Wars?
I don't know.
It's okay. It's a little bit different.
Do you need to link me a picture?
It's a little bit different. There's Shoutmon, who is like kind of the Agumon of the series. He's, you know, he's not designed like an Agumon. He's like a little more sleeker and kind, you know, he kind of just like a little guy. There's Ballistamon, who is kind of like the big tank, who is also a boombox. And then there's Darulumon, who is like a lion made of drills. And I don't know, I'm just seeing some parallels there. Might be a bit of a stretch, but you know.
Oh, here's the thing. Tons and tons of stuff references Getter, and you never know it.
Yeah.
Because you don't know this. I am tossing in the chat what Getter 1, 2, and 3 look like.
Uh-huh.
Getter 1 is cool. Getter 2 and 3 kind of silly.
Uh-huh.
Just a little bit.
Uh-huh.
So you've shown me this. There's a red one with like kind of a big triangle crown on the head.
Yeah, that's Shoutmon. I don't like him.
Yeah, like
he's
it's not
a favorite Agumon.
Yeah, it's not a V fin. It's like a triangular shaped horn head.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a Getter One head.
Uh huh.
You got the partially white drill cat.
Uh-huh.
And then like the biggest departure is that big tanky boy.
Yeah.
Is the big tanky boy on treads?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. Don't worry, not all Getter 3s have treads. Some of them have legs.
Okay.
But I'm not gonna go over all the different Getter robos. I am going to be mindful of our recording time. Sure. Because we did just hit an hour of recording and I should get through this. Okay. So you got those. I want to avoid spoiling some absolutely like awesome bits.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just gonna say the original Getter Robo kind of goes off the rails a little bit with some big surprises in the finale.
Uh-huh.
And they immediately followed it up with Getter Robo G, which had a new Getter Robo, the Getter Robo G. It was like Getter Robo but better. And there were new villains, the Hayaki Empire, which is made up of humans that turned themselves into Oni. You got a new empire, so they gotta have a new emperor. This time it's Emperor Barai. Funny enough, Barai was a scientist who reverse engineered a UFO. If I don't mention this UFO again, ask me what was the deal with the UFO.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay.
Keep that in mind.
I'm mostly going to skip G because I would have to spoil the finale of the original, the first arc. Okay. Getter Robo G, the three Getter machines are the Dragon, the Liger, and Poseidon.
Okay.
I prefer the original design. Getter Robo G was one of the toys that made it over in Shogun Warriors, though.
Uh-huh.
You know, those like 2 foot tall action figures.
Yeah.
That had the rocket punches and such. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So you had Getter Robo, you had Getter Robo G. There's a gap of 15 years. Both in real life and in the story. Because Kenny Ishikawa came back in 1991 and was like, okay, 15 years have passed. I'm gonna set this sequel up 15 years after the end of the previous story.
Uh-huh.
Best I can tell, originally this started out as Toei was gonna make a Mazinger Z reboot anime. Sorry, uh-huh. Mazinger Z.
Uh-huh.
But they were going to make a reboot of it. And then kind of late in development, they were like, no, let's make a Getter sequel instead.
Okay.
And so in general, there's huge differences between the manga and any of the TV anime for the most part, uh-huh. except for the last one. But you got this 15-year gap.
Yeah.
Hey, your favorite boy there, Hayato. He's a scientist now.
Uh-huh. Good for him.
And he built a new Getter Robo, the Getter Robo Go.
Uh-huh.
This is very different though.
Yeah.
Hayato was a Getter pilot. He's like, hey, Getter Rays are super fucked up, and you know what? I'm gonna build a robot that doesn't use this like eldritch horror of an energy source.
Uh-huh.
And Getter Robo Go is like a much more military thing. Uh-huh. In fact, The titular robot is Japan's contribution to an international coalition against the new threat, mad scientist Dr. Rando and his metal beasts.
Uh-huh.
His army being metal beasts is like one of the things that kind of held over from this start out as a Mazinger Z reboot. Anyway. One of the things I want to mention about this is there's an American character in it.
Uh-huh. Oh, I bet he's super funny.
His name is Schwarzkopf.
Interesting.
Yeah, given the time, I'm sure he was named after the general.
Uh-huh.
The thing about Schwartz is he is like a super mega racist.
Ooh, yeah.
He hates the Japanese the most.
Uh-huh.
There's a whole thing where he goes on a tirade about ranking how much he hates different races.
Great.
Incredible. He's that type of scum.
Uh-huh.
He does eventually, he doesn't become good, but uh-huh. he does start to realize at some point, oh, hey, you know what? the way I think and act is kind of fucked up. So there is that, at least.
Yeah.
So this is set 15 years later. There's a new Getter team.
Uh-huh.
Go Ichimonji. Sho Tachibana. Uh-huh. Hey, it's a lady.
Wow.
Equal and rights. Guy Dido.
Uh-huh.
Alright, so halfway through Go, Dr. Rando is defeated, and that's where the series and meta-series really just starts twisting and turning. Okay. Old enemies return with new threats, and shit just goes completely off the rails in the best way. Body horror's been there in Getter since like very early in the manga. But it features a lot more in Go and just keeps on going. This is also where the weird cosmic horror stuff picks up and comes to the forefront too. So at this midway point, it's like, hey, what happened 15 years ago that destroyed the Sao Tome Institute? What secrets does the Shin Getter Robo hold?
Yeah, what about that guy?
Why do the Getter pilots keep having these horrible nightmares?
I would also like to know this.
Yeah. Just what are Getter rays? Are they radiation, or are they some kind of unknowable intelligence with a goal?
Oh, that's a scary question.
Uh-huh. Why does a planet get terraformed before all this ends?
Yeah, that's another interesting one.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so with that many questions, we definitely needed another Getter story.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't have to wait all that long. That came out in 1996. I think it ran to 99.
Uh-huh.
With Shin Getter Robo. Hey, guess what? You'd think that this would be a sequel?
Uh-huh.
No, it's an in-betweenquel. It's an interquel.
Interesting.
Yeah, it picks up a year after G ended.
Uh-huh.
So the second half of Go was kind of everything crazy dialed up to the max.
Uh-huh.
And then Shin just kept on cranking that dial past the limiters. And just spun it more and more.
Uh-huh.
And everything gets so interconnected. I can't really say much. Uh-huh. But let's say that there's even more Getter Robos. There's enemies literally from beyond space and time.
Okay.
Hey, we get an explanation for that UFO.
Yeah, I was about to ask about the UFO.
There's some time travel.
Okay. Yeah.
And like, one of the big reveals in Shin Getter Robo is, hey, you know what? One day humanity and Getter are going to devour the entire fucking universe.
Uh-huh.
That's probably not good.
Probably not it doesn't sound ideal to me, really.
Yeah. And then, in the early 2000s, there was yet another sequel.
Uh-huh.
This was well after, like, this takes place after everything else. And it was called Getter Robo Arc.
Okay.
Hey, and things are real bad on planet Earth.
Yeah, doesn't sound like they're great.
Yeah, so there's these new enemies. I think depending on how it's translated, they're either called the Andromeda Stelleration or the Andromeda Country. I'm going to go with Stelleration because that sounds cooler.
Uh-huh.
And Earth is kind of on its last legs.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Hiro, he's still here. He's in charge of the Sao Tome Institute, and there's a new Getter Robo, the Getter Robo Arc. With this one, we get yet another getter team. Takuma, who I'm not going to say his last name because he's the son of one of the original pilots.
Oh.
There's Kamoisho, a human dinosaur hybrid.
Oh, hell yeah.
And a monk by the name of Baku Yamagishi. Again, the crazy gets cranked up more and more. We thought Shin Getter was the new maximum. There's no way it was going to get crazier than that. No. Ishikawa was like, hold my beer.
All right, let's go. Let's hear it.
So, there's an unfortunate part of this, though.
Yeah. Oh, there always is.
So, the magazine that Getter Robo Arc was published in got canceled.
Yeah.
So, Arc ended on a cliffhanger.
Uh-huh.
And before Ishikawa could come back to it, one day when he was out hanging out with his friends, including Go Nagai, I think they were golfing. He went home and that night he passed away.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. So oddly enough, Arc is the one manga that got an anime adaptation. It pretty closely followed the manga of Arc. They expanded on quite a bit. They probably improved on it. By tying in other threads, to make it kind of a more complete whole. And we get to that cliffhanger that Arc was left on. Cue credits.
Aw, man. Come on.
Oh. But they played us.
Yeah, oh.
They played us.
Yeah.
Because if you were paying attention when you were watching it, you're like, I know how much time has passed. The credits end. And the story continues.
Incredible. Let's go.
But guess what?
What?
They really played us. This was their masterstroke.
Yeah.
It continues on. We get like another 5 minutes or so of story. And it ends on a new cliffhanger.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
You love to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I will mention is there eventually comes to be a Getter Robo known as the Getter Emperor. Hey, you know, Unicron from the Transformers?
I do. Big Planet Man. Orson Welles hates him.
Yeah. Unicron, Galactus, all those guys. They're nothing. They're nothing compared to the Getter Emperor.
Ooh.
Yeah, the Getter Emperor is like, oh, those fuckers are tiny. They're beyond my notice.
Wow. So big man is what I'm getting from that.
Yeah, and hey, again, humanity and the Getter go to consume the entire universe. So one of the questions that that gets asked in Getter is, hey, you know, there's all this stuff that's trying to wipe out humanity.
Uh-huh.
Is it really good for us to fight? Like, humanity is kind of shitty.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can kill all challengers, but should we? Are we really the ones that morally should continue?
Hey, are we baddies?
Yeah. Yeah, it really does ask, hey, is humanity in general the baddies? So yeah, it's super interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so all that said, even though I normally say I don't watch anything that doesn't get completed, I mean, there's a reason why I don't watch TV, because I've seen too many TV shows that just kind of get canceled midway through. And it's very annoying. Especially when it's serialized.
Yeah.
But no, Get a Robo is too good and influential to skip. Everyone should read it. If you don't want to read it, hey, I've got some options for you.
Uh-huh.
Now, there is no English release.
Uh-huh.
But thanks to fan translators, specifically a group called Dynamic Pro Scanlations.
Uh-huh.
It's out there. It's available. You can...
less fan translators. They're truly doing the Lord's work.
Yeah, and it's not even just the original version. So, one of the things that happened eventually was, over the years, Ishikawa also sometimes did some like one-offs and bonus chapters and stuff, here and there, and so. To tie everything together and to, like, take care of some stuff that got retconned and all, there's a version of all the Get a Robo mangas called Get a Robo Saga. And that's what's available in English. Thank you, fan translators. You're awesome. So, about the animes. The original animes, they're kids' cartoons. They're kind of monster of the week. They have some high points. I don't see much point to watching them. You can just read the manga; it'll be so much better.
Yeah.
So there are three OVAs.
Uh huh.
In order of release, it's Shin Get a Robo Armageddon.
Uh-huh.
What is it? I think the second one is Shin Get a Robo versus New Get a Robo.
Uh-huh.
Shin Get a Robo versus Neo Get a Robo, and then the third one is New Get a Robo.
Uh-huh.
None of them are really adapting the manga. They're kind of just like, hey, here's just a celebration of Get a Robo. Here's kind of a greatest hits remix, or here's our take on the concepts of it.
Yeah.
So the one I particularly want to talk about, though, is the one that was my introduction to Getter, and that is Shin Get a Robo Armageddon.
Yeah. You've recommended this to me. I have not yet seen it, but I know this is the one you're kind of pushing for.
Yeah, it's the one I had you look at the, like, 3 minutes of episode 8.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's one of those OVAs that got the time and budget.
Uh-huh.
And you would think, there's no way this could be good. This was a cursed production, because no one publicly knows or has spoken about what happened. but but the guy who was the writer and director of the project left a quarter of the way through and took all of his plans with him.
Oh, that's not good.
And so, like, they had to have new writer, new director come in, pick up the pieces, you know, take what was already made and be like, okay, we gotta make another 9 episodes of this.
Uh-huh.
And somehow, it just goes nuts in all the good ways. It combines things. It includes stuff from other Ishikawa works. It's just good. Now, the setup is that it's a sequel to a show that was never made. So it can be a bit confusing. I mean, when it starts off, Ryoma's gone to prison for the murder of Dr. Saotome.
Uh-huh.
There's all sorts of stuff. It does have one of those of its time period translations.
Uh-huh.
There are things in it that I suspect are translation problems.
Yeah.
I really hope that I really hope that a few of the lines are mistranslations, because if they aren't, they also just don't make any fucking sense.
Yeah.
There is a line in the subs about, oh, hey, an event so traumatic it gave him autism.
Hmm.
That's not how that works.
Yeah.
I think, based on context, I think it's supposed to be made them catatonic.
Yeah, I think, The podcast Mobile Suit Breakdown did a really interesting deep dive into, like, Japanese cultural perception of autism based on, uh-huh. like, a weird use of the word that I think Amuro did in either, like, 79 or Zeta.
Uh-huh.
And I completely forget the content of it, but, you know, I remember being like, interesting. There's kind of a wrong idea about what autism is in the popular culture of the time.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that may be an accurate one. That's based on a barely remembered excerpt from a podcast that I listened to a couple years ago.
Yeah, and I'll also warn everyone, there's some kind of weird and fucked up things involving gender in this show.
Yeah.
Like, it would be spoiling to reveal it, though. But yeah, like there may be some things in it that may be off-putting, but hey, it also has, like, cosmic horror and body horror and all this fucked up shit. You saw the clip. It's something in it is going to be off-putting to you.
I saw a bunch of goopy people putty get squished around.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, so, again, this show, it wants you to know this isn't where the character started.
Mm-hmm.
And the villains in this are the invaders and alien menace that had a 10-year long war with humanity.
Uh-huh.
And after a few episodes, hey, the title comes into play. I mean, that's not the original title. That's the English title. I think the literal translation of the title would be Shingeru Robo, The Last Day of Earth.
Uh-huh.
You know, reasonable to translate as Armageddon.
Yeah.
There kind of is an Armageddon and a pretty long time skip following it.
Interesting.
This is also kind of post-apocalyptic. eventually. Yay! So, before we start this, I had you listen to the second opening song of Shin Gare Robo Armageddon.
Yes, it sounded very familiar to me. I definitely feel like I've heard it before. Was it like one of the themes they used in Wow Cool Robot or something?
No. A version of it did show up in the Xenu Vibes playlist.
Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That must be it.
You would understand more. We need to go on another tangent before we're done. I am sorry because we're going long. I'm one of the people that's influenced by Getter also. If the song is titled Heats. It's by Jam Project. I need to find this. Okay. Hironobu Kageyama is the guy who sings it. He's like the current leader of Jam Project. He's one of the original members. You'd heard the song before. That song is a banger.
It's pretty fucking good. It goes pretty hard.
It is so fucking good. Almost all the Getter songs are absolute bangers.
Hell yeah.
So, Mr. Kageyama, you've experienced him before. And I'm not just talking about him being in Jam Project, because, hey, just due to the nature of what Jam Project is, you've heard a ton of anime openings that they did, I'm sure. This is how I get to talk about Garo again for a second.
Oh, boy.
He's in Garo.
Oh shit! Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He's Zaruba.
Okay, remind me who that is.
The ring.
Okay. Oh yeah.
He's the guy that's been in every single iteration of everything Garo. Also.
Wow.
Because Zaruba is always in Garo. Yeah. Always with the same voice.
How the ring broke and then they just made a new ring with the same face and name and everything? And it's just, like, hi, I'm a new guy. I don't remember any of the things that the old guy did. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I think... Okay, just to go down this road slightly, this will only be seconds. I think it's at least implied that, like, the demonic souls that they bind to create that shit, they use the same ones.
So kind of the same guy.
Yeah, so kind of the same guy. That's Getter Robo. My friends, this is why Izzy believes in Getter. A lot of Getter has made it into things I create, whether I actively realize it or not. I said that Heats was in the Xenu Vibes playlist. If you look up the lyrics, it makes a lot more sense for it to be there. But from Shin Getter Robo Armageddon, like the kind of black cloak look and the red scarf. Two different things in it, but those are definitely me just making references to Getter in that.
Hell yeah.
Probably for the Void in our Fellowship campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I think some Getter got into that too.
Uh-huh.
So, which wasn't intentional there, like, hey, the Xenu's, fit, when she started out, like, that's just cool, that was intentional. Uh-huh. But, yeah, Getter has this thing where it really influences people, and Gurren Lagann is basically just, hey, I want to make my own version of Getter because I loved it so much.
Uh-huh.
So, any questions?
Gosh, no, that seems pretty comprehensive. Sounds like I need to go watch this OVA for real.
Oh, don't tempt me that way. I started a rewatch and I only finished the first episode.
Ah, rip.
This could be a simulwatch.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, so I guess hey.
Yeah.
So long, folks. And fuck dinosaurs.
Fuck dinosaurs. Peace out.
Peace.
Bye.